Salake, what's up?
What's up?
Say hi to the people.
Yeah, you too. I know Dave Sharpley's watching.
Is Dave Sharpley watching?
He texted me already. I miss Dave.
Nice. They actually, I get the periodic DM from Dave about some stuff going on here and there. So
few people care about the safety of drivers more than Dave and Tina.
Yeah, which
they just care.
Safety was kind of in the spotlight this week.
It was. So that's my shameless plug. But no, Dave's the best. I know that. Like, I'm going to a Deming tonight to watch the micros pending they race. The sun's actually shining right now here. For now, it just finished raining like 10 minutes ago, and it's going to rain more. But nonetheless, I know that Levi Hillier, who I'm going to watch tonight, he just was out in Indy getting fitted for a seat insert from Dave.
Nice. So obviously, you spent a long time as an announcer for the All-Stars. Tell everybody what it is that you're actually doing right now.
I don't even really have a job title, I don't think. That's the question everyone asks me. And I asked John, my boss, the other day, you know, what do I say? I don't know. I'm in, I guess, management team promotions here at Skagit Speedway as we're ramping up for our 70th season, which is exciting. And I think I've really, you know me, I'm a lot like you and kind of a numbers nerd. I like watching the numbers very closely. So I've been really diving in on our ticket sales and monitoring that and working hard with Lisa Dines on our social media stuff. She does a lot of our social media and the marketing, and she's phenomenal at that, really gaining exposure here at Skagit. So I've really enjoyed that. And that's kind of my focus is looking over Skagit and working with John and Peter Murphy, our promoter, John Hager's our general manager, and how we can continue to elevate Skagit to the next level. I think we're making progress as I've looked at our car counts the last 3 years and they're on the climb. And I think we're going to see the on the climb again this year, which is fun.
I think it's interesting. You are kind of at this moment, you know, in the Pacific Northwest and you're at Skagit, which is obviously, you know, they have sprint cars there weekly. But I saw this week that you were tweeting out Knoxville stats. And I was wondering if maybe you were just getting that little bit of an itch to maybe do some stuff again.
You know me, I've really enjoyed Knoxville is a passion. That's home for me. And I love digging into their numbers, which is fun. But I don't know. I've had some opportunities to do a little bit of announcing, and I haven't jumped at them per se. I've been more making sure that I've got my full focus on Skagit Speedway right now, which is obviously my bread and butter. I think that I haven't even really talked to John, and I actually talked about it last night. Like, if Caleb Hart, who's our weekly announcer, who's phenomenal, if he has to miss a night, maybe you would jump in and fill in there instead of us going and hiring somebody to bring in. So maybe I would announce a night at Skagit. Caleb asked about me announcing at Dirt Cup with him, and I don't know. I mean, I'm going to be pretty tied up with our Skagit stuff, so you never know. I think maybe the foundation race with High Limit. Actually, Kendra and Chase had talked to me about the Race Redeem Foundation race because I'll be there with the foundation. And Kevin mentioned, you know, that, hey, if you want to hop in for a little bit, you can jump in there. So maybe that's when I'll make my return for a race or two there. And then obviously I'm still planning on doing Gateway Dirt Nationals and Chili Bowl, but right now those are kind of my only two that I have on my planner, and that's obviously a long ways away. I got to get there. Right now I have a full head of hair, but give me a couple months of this working at a racetrack thing and that might be different.
What do you think so far, Pacific Northwest? Have you had a chance to get out and explore a little bit yet?
It's beautiful. It's incredible. Look, I've told my parents, like, a clear day here is undefeated when I'm driving down I-5 from the racetrack. Because it's about a 50-minute drive for me to the racetrack. I live on the north side of Seattle. I'm like 20 minutes north of downtown, and it's about 50 miles from where I live in Linwood to get here to the racetrack. So when I'm driving back home at night, if it's clear, you know, sunny day, you can see Mount Rainier from 120 miles away, and it's stunning. And or driving to the racetrack, Mount Baker, that sits actually up by Deming Speedway, where I'll go tonight to watch the micros, and you can see that. It's incredible. I went down. My buddy Brent Anderson lives out here. Fire Down Graphics. He works at Joe's.
Interesting side note about Brett Anderson, the Dirt Tracker logo that's on the screen right now was designed by Brent Anderson.
I'm not surprised. Brent's done a lot of work for us here, but Brent's a really good buddy of mine, and he's really taken me out and shown me a lot of Seattle. And we have a lot of places we want to get. I'd say in February, there was a really, really nice Saturday. It was like 70 degrees. So we went downtown, and I went back up the Space Needle. It had been a couple of years since then, and down to Pike Place Market and walked around, and we had a couple beers at some places. So I'm looking forward to exploring the city more this summer and getting out to like the San Juan Islands. That's where Steve Beitler, that used to own the racetrack, he has his boat out there, and he's been on me to come out there. I don't know if my liver's ready for a weekend with Beitler, but I'm not young anymore. I'm not in college. In college, I maybe could have done it, but no, Steve wants to show me that, and I'm excited to get out there.
But it is beautiful.
I feel like we've seen, you know, a lot of progress at Skagit here since Kevin Rudin and Peter Murphy and kind of this change in ownership group from Beitler. What are the projects you guys kind of have going on? Like, what are the things you're kind of excited for this year?
It's all pending on the county and what they approve. We've got a lot of permits in to get a lot going. I mean, since we've gotten the racetrack, we've got a big screen. You've seen a lot of updates, new boards in the grandstands painted. So when race fans come here next week for our season opener, which you're a Star Wars guy, aren't you, Fiedler?
Oh, yeah.
So here's something cool. It's May 4th next week. So May the 4th be with
May
you.
May the 4th, yeah.
We have 9 Star Wars characters coming from an actors guild down in Seattle in full character. So we'll have Star Wars characters here all night, which is going to be cool. But when they come for that, we've got new turf down, a new victory lane that just got painted, new concrete down there, a new flag stand, new paint all over the facility. All the buildings have been repainted, a lot of new turf laid down, some gravel put down. We've got permits in to get a new press box, which is where our office will be. I was telling you before we went live, we're basically right now, if construction sites, like a construction site office, they custom fabbed 2 construction site offices for us with windows. And one that I'm sitting in right now is our press box. And then right below us is our office. So that's all temporary, but hoping for some new bathrooms, some updates, a lot of updates around the facility. And that's one of the things that Kevin's kind of put me on, is I've been working on a narrative, which I've never done before. So I had to Google how to write a narrative, and working with John on that, on other projects we want to do at Skagit to continue to elevate it. We got some property across the racetrack, across the road. So it's very similar to Eldora, where if you've been to Eldora, you know, Highway 118 splits the racetrack and then some of the campground across the street. That's kind of similar to what we have. We got some more property across the street, so we're hoping to do some stuff over there, and we'll at least have additional parking. And we've got a lot of stuff on our to-do list that is all pending getting permits from the county.
Well, and you guys have some big time sprint car racing this year. Obviously, you'll have High Limit come through. You got Dirt Cup. You know, what about those events are you excited about? Do you think, you know, the area will support them? I mean, obviously, Dirt Cup is an event that's been there for a long time, but High Limit now kind of taking the place of the outlaw shows that have been there in the past. But what are you looking forward to about those events, and how do you think they're going to go?
I'm just excited to learn the process of working these races behind the scenes on the business side of things. As I said, the tickets, I've been really diving into that on our ticketing, and our Dirt Cup tickets are trending pretty good, about normal. And Dirt Cup is our bread and butter. I tell people, you know, if you know Skagit Speedway, you probably know us for Dirt Cup in June, which is our $62,000 to win race that last year Justin Sanders won, and $500 a lap. He led all 40, so got $82,000. So we'll have some lap money again this year. And that's sanctioned with NARC. And NARC does a like fastest 5 days where they come up through Oregon into Washington. And then that leads right into Dirt Cup. And we've got some fan events planned around. So that's fun. And then the end of July, we have a $15,000 to win 360 race. Bob's Burgers and Brews Summer Nationals that ASCS Frontier sanctions, that for a while was sanctioned by ASCS National when they would come up here. But now the Frontier region sanctions it. And that's a big event that gets a pretty good car count. And then obviously High Limit, $100,000 to win for now. And that's exciting that we've got $200,000 to win races on the West Coast with that. And the Gold Cup down at Chico, that's literally the week before. So that's August 29, 30, and 31. And I'm excited for that, just to see. I haven't been out here for that event, whether the Skagit Nationals, and we got some exciting sponsorship on that with Sage Fruits back. And then Elliott's Custom Trailers is our presenting sponsor. Cindy Elliott hopped on out of Indiana, so that's fun. And our ticket sales there, that's the one I've really been monitoring, because that's the change. You know, we had the Outlaws there for quite a while, and now High Limit comes in. So we've had to kind of educate some fans on what High Limit is, and they're still going to see the superstars of sprint car racing. But our ticket sales there have been trending in the right direction. And I know that a lot of people get $100,000 to win, why don't you make it 50 and spread the money through the purse? And we did raise the purse, but the $100,000 to win, just as you know, pops. That's what gets attention. We could do $50,000 to win, and our ticket sales would be way less, because $100,000 to win sticks out. So hopefully, if we can continue to shoot ticket sales up and sponsorship, that's something where the next thing on our list is to increase the purse from second on back.
Can you turn your computer around so we can see the racetrack? Is that possible? Yeah.
Oh, it's pretty. The sun's out right now. There
we go.
You can see the big screen there.
Yeah, live look at Skagit Speedway. Got the big screen on. What's on the big screen right now? Are you watching a movie or something?
The ad for Dirt Cup is on there. So we had some potential partners out at the racetrack this morning that John was showing around. So he had them in here. That's our scoring room where our big screen runs off those two laptops there. That is so he had them in there. Sorry if you give you motion sickness there. But so he had the big screen going. So which has been the thorn in the side for Skagit Speedway. They got this big screen 2 years ago and it hasn't really ran. And now we got a kid from about 10 miles south of here that's going to run it nightly. So we'll be able to do some more stuff with that. We've got some cool things planned there that you see at like baseball games that John's kind of a nerd for and really got working, which I think is going to be really cool and fun interactions for the crowd. And then we have a camera guy each week that'll be here. So we'll have some YouTube highlights each week. If you're wanting to watch Skagit around the country, that's the first time we've ever had that. And who knows, maybe some streaming on down the line, but we got to walk before we run here.
What's the YouTube channel? Do you have it set up yet?
I think it's just Skagit Speedway. I think okay. Lisa had it set up, I believe. I don't know if I disappeared there, J-Feeds, because I'm on a different tab. I believe I haven't got the credentials to that yet. So
okay. I just want, like, if people are watching, they want to tune in. Let's give them the...
Yeah. I can't even find it right now. I believe it's just Skagit Speedway, though. I'm almost positive it is.
Okay, let me...
There it is. Yep, Skagit Speedway. We've got 164 subscribers right now.
Oh, we're that's booming. That's business nothing.
Business is booming.
We got 123 people in here watching right now. All of those people can go subscribe to the Skagit Speedway
YouTube channel. We'll have YouTube highlights each week, which is something Brent Anderson, who I mentioned earlier, had talked to me about. Like Caleb, he works with Caleb Hart, our announcer, and Caleb would come to back to work on Monday and say, "Oh, you wouldn't believe the racing. It was awesome at Skagit." And I said, "Well, where can I see highlights?" Well, they're not there. Now, problem solved. We got Randy Frank shooting him. And Randy's a veteran. He's been shooting sprint cars for 30 years. So he knows the ins and outs.
Hell yeah. I want to ask a question here from the chat. Have you run into Bigfoot yet?
I have not. You know, he's probably out there, though. As I showed the racetrack, you can see we've got woods all around us, especially behind it. So he probably is out there somewhere. It's funny because anywhere you go, like the cliche postcards will have him on there, Sasquatch, Bigfoot. My dad worked at Jack Link's for 5 years, 7 years, 7 years. And they obviously have Sasquatch. So when I moved out here, dad was right at home seeing that guy advertised all over because he saw him in the office every Monday.
Yeah. What do you think about, obviously, World of Outlaws canceled for tonight at Knoxville. I saw you tweet about everybody should have known that this was going to be canceled because of an event there.
Drake Relays weekend. Drake Relays is the second biggest relays in the country behind the Penn Relays. And you go back home, you ask people, what do you know about Drake Relays? What stands out about Drake Relays? And I guarantee 9 out of 10 people will say crappy weather. It's uncanny. It rains every year during the relays. They'll have people coming, you know, some of the biggest runners in the world coming in and run Olympians, gold medals. And it's just the worst weather ever, every year. I feel so bad because the relays, when it's great weather, it's an incredible event to be at. But it's just awful weather every single year.
What do you think so far, now that you're kind of out of it, you know, you're not the all-star announcer anymore. And obviously there was an attempt to get you to be the high limit announcer, but what do you think about right now, the kind of current state of things now that we are, you know, a couple of months into this sprint car season?
You know, it's honestly gone better than what I thought it would. I was a little bit nervous. I mean, I think one of the things that I was most nervous about is, do we have enough teams to travel to support two national touring series? And obviously, I mean,
that was a concern I had as well.
High Limits got, 15, 16 teams, something like that. The Outlaws are at 12 right now, which everyone says 12. I can tell you from working a series, 10 to 12 is the honey hole. That's where you want to be. It's the perfect amount of teams for you to be able to support them with tow money and local teams because you rely heavily on local fans showing up and teams showing up. So 10 to 12 is about perfect. And I'd be interested to ask Brad, like, did you even expect to get 16 to 17 teams declaring to run the series, which is pretty impressive. I think that speaks a lot to the volume or to what they've put together over there. I mean, geez, they're racing for 20 grand quite often, which is impressive. And I think their car counts have been pretty strong. And I think, you know, everyone gave them a hard time about some of their crowds in Oklahoma. Well, those were tough polls out there. And I know, you know, the Outlaws were there a couple weeks before then too. So the Outlaws were in that area pretty predominantly a couple weeks before too. So those fans were being pulled on quite a bit that time of year. So then they come back at Memphis last week and have a packed house, which is great to see. So I'm very encouraged. I think it's going better than I, full disclosure, would have even expected it to go for everybody involved, the Outlaws and High Limit.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. And I feel like the stuff with the crowds and the promotion, like High Limit is starting from absolute scratch. And obviously now that you're kind of on the side of it, you see what it takes to sell tickets and promote to fans and things like that. And it's like, it's going to take them some time to kind of get that built up and, you know, hire staff and have all of the things kind of in place to be able to do that. So, you know, I think when they go to the big places, like we see, you know, those early season events, you know, East Bay did well. And, you know, you go to Texas Motor Speedway, they got that kind of in conjunction with the NASCAR weekend. I thought the crowds were, looked really good there. They're going to have some misses, just like, you know, sometimes the Outlaws have misses too. Like it's just going to be kind of part of the deal. But what do you think so far about the racing that you've seen and you know, just kind of overall between the two series, what we've seen so far?
I've been impressed. I think High Limits really has brought some good racing to the table. I think one of the things that I like about their program, not in the racing, but I love their roulette wheel for the dash draw. Like it's more than just what they draw seven done. I thought the creativity there was really, really cool. And I almost enjoy the draft draw a little bit more to watch the guy spin the wheel and see where it lands. And it's created some fun racing. And then their Durst Dice Roll is fun to get the fans involved. I think both series have done a nice job getting fans involved, whether it be the Durst Dice Roll or bringing a fan down to potentially win some money, or the Outlaws have their Fan of the Night, which I think is pretty cool. Shoot, I was watching Hubstadt or Paducah, one of the two, was last weekend, and one of the fan had driven all the way from Central New York for that race weekend. So I thought that was pretty neat. They do a nice job of pulling some fans out, the Outlaws do, that have driven a long ways away. And you know, we've worked in conjunction, obviously, with the Outlaws for a long time here, and now with High Limit. And I've been on several calls with Kendra Jacobs for High Limit on working on some promotion stuff here, and they've been great to deal with. And I have a great relationship with Kendra, obviously, from her days at Knoxville and before then, and obviously her dad, Kenny, being a all-star legend that we would see throughout the season with the all-stars. So they're all familiar faces to me. And obviously, you know, as you mentioned at the top of the show, you and I spent a year working together at World Racing Group, where my office was, I turned around the door and there was Justin Fiedler's office, and I would peek my head in there and spend time in your office. But those were good times. But I'm excited. I think both series have a great thing going right now. And I think it proves that maybe we were wrong and it is sustainable.
I want to ask you about one guy specifically, and a guy that you've gotten to see a lot the last couple of years, and that's Tyler Courtney. I don't know that I would have expected him to be leading the points at this, you know, at this juncture of the season. And we knew that he was getting better and on the rise, but to see what he's done so far, I feel like is really, really impressive.
I don't think it's gotten enough coverage either that Tyler Courtney, not only jumping to High Limit to a national series and exceeding expectations, but he changed chassis and motor combination. Like they pretty much threw everything out that they had known at CMR and started from scratch and have really not dropped off. I mean, honestly, I feel like they picked their game up. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just Tyler, he started 12th one night, drove to second. I mean, he's a model of consistency. I feel like he's getting smarter as a race car driver too, as that comes with now he's got over 100 wing races under his belt on picking his points on when to make moves and when not to make moves. He's not putting himself in bad positions. His IQ as a race car driver, very, very high. And he's so good with the fans. And I think that he has really impressed me this year, more than what I even thought. Obviously, I saw him run so strong for 3 years there with the All-Stars. But he has really turned some heads this year, I feel like, and proven that he can do it on the big stage consistently, because he has been as consistent as anybody with High Limit this year.
Yeah, I felt like, you know, once the High Limit season started that, you know, it was going to be Brad, probably Rico's 1A, you know, or 1B right in there. You know, and then it takes Brad a while to win in his first race. He's now trailing Sunshine in the standings. We've got Corey Day out of nowhere winning 3 of 5. I feel like this thing is a lot more competitive than I thought it was going to be. I thought Brad would come in and just run away with this thing, but that's not happening right now.
I mean, shoot, before the season, I said I wouldn't be surprised if Brad and Kyle win 30 to 40 of the races. And now it's like, boy, there's the competition is pretty stiff all over the place. I mean, you mentioned it, you know, Brent Marks is right there as well. And hopefully we can get Zeb rolling. We just have terrible luck. They're at the dyno today, so maybe they're figuring some things out, but they've just had terrible luck, obviously, with the bleeder going out, starting six. So that's my nudge to get them going. But they're I talked to Tyler Tessmaker, the crew chief, yesterday, and they're feeling good. So that's encouraging how good they feel. And I think the speed is there for them. But that's the thing with High Limit. It's so deep for you look from like through the field. There's not a really much of a fall off anywhere in their field. Because I think Brenham Crouch and Chris Windham, they're like 14th and 15th in points. They have both shown flashes that they're capable of it. So there's not a big fall off.
I wanted to ask you, now that you are kind of tied in with the Radin squad as well, you know, this Wicker Bill thing seems like it's been kind of a topic of conversation ongoing, and it seems like maybe some guys are struggling this year who we weren't expecting to, and I'm curious if you've heard those guys talk about the Wicker and whether they think that's having an effect on things.
I need to ask Tyler that. I have not asked Tyler or Zeb that. Because, shoot, I mean, they didn't race in March because we got a new trailer, so they're going to transition over that. And they've been racing so much that I almost feel bad calling Tyler or Zeb during the week, knowing that, especially that what they raced, they had those 7 races in 10 days through 3 states there. So I feel like I don't want to bother them. I know they're locked in and busy, but I'd be interested to know that. I feel like the racing has maybe settled in nicely, and we've seen more passing. I mean, shoot, look at Macri the other night at Port Royal.
Yeah.
Ripping through the field. Was it Port that he went like 18th to win, or was
no,
that
Williams Grove?
Even more impressive at the Grove, a track that you think is really hard to pass. So I think there was a lot of hesitancy from people at first on, I mean, you did that deep dive in the analytics side of it about a month ago on the passing, and it's kind of similar, but I'd be interested to maybe look at it in July and see as we've settled in. I feel like we've seen more passing. I don't know, but it's also recency effect too.
Yeah, and it's definitely something we'll obviously be keeping an eye on, and you know, now that we've got some of the numbers and stuff, we can definitely, you know, kind of track that through the course of the season. But on the Outlaw side, you know, we thought kind of it was going to be gravel, and he's kind of established himself out front. But you know, it's not easy over there either. You've got Gio being consistent. You've got Donnie all of a sudden. Like Donnie looks like, you know, 6 years ago, Donnie.
Awesome. And
I'm curious what you think about what's gone on over there.
You know who's really impressed me with the Outlaws is Bill Balog.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Bill has been so strong. I told several people, you know, Bill ran with the All-Stars for a couple years and then didn't last year. But the years they did, we really enjoyed having him. I don't think we ever had a problem with Bill in the 2 seasons, like 0 run-ins with them. And obviously, when you race that much, you're going to have problems with teams, and you don't hurt it personally at all. It's just racing. But he was so easy going and easy to be around. He and Dennis, his crew guy, were great. And he's been impressive. I think Gio Selzy, you mentioned, has been super impressive. Carson Macedo started a little slow and now is back to where we expected him to be. And I wondered, I haven't asked Carson, but they had big changes at JJR this offseason that you had documented. And then they went through Volusia and then made more changes. So I feel like they're kind of settling in here. Sheldon started really slow. And then now he's firing wins off and showing the speeds there. I think the Outlaw point, you look first to fifth, is like 64 points, I think.
Yeah, it's not much.
It's right there. So that's a really good points battle. And then you had the gravel running. And one of the things that I think you have pointed out through the years is sprint car drivers, how good they are on social media. And I think it's really fun to see guys like David Gravel, his YouTube stuff through the year, and then he broke down the crash the other day with Buddy Kofoid, and Kofoid's obviously been ripping. Mm-hmm. But he broke it down and said, you know, maybe it wasn't the right time for it, but I appreciate that transparency that we're getting from these guys. And now Giovanni Selzy has this show on YouTube with my buddy Chris Williams back home, and CW is awesome. And I haven't watched yesterday's episode yet. I was going to watch it on my way home.
I've watched a few clips from it.
So yeah. I'll watch it maybe today. But CW is awesome, and Gio, I think the thing I appreciate about Giovanni is he's brash. He just says it. I like that.
He's upfront about it.
He's upfront. He doesn't hold back. We need guys like that in our sport. And that's been a great show in learning about him. And then you've got Dom. Dom was on him with him 2 weeks ago on the show, and that was a blast. And we'll have Dom up here at Skagit a couple of times, which will be fun. And he's been fun to watch. But the Outlaws, they've got that 1-7 in there is right there on top of each other, and then you have Brock Searfoss and right there just behind them. It's they've got a pretty strong field too. I've said a couple times I'm very encouraged with the track that our sport's on right now with 410 sprint cars.
kind of looking at that Kofoid gravel thing, and you know, they had the run in the week before at Peavely, then, you know, we have this situation. And I think if they don't have that run in the week before at Peavely, like, gravel probably doesn't have the reaction that he did. But I'm wondering, you know, just kind of in a more general sense, as somebody like yourself who's been out on the road for so many years with these guys, is that something that's going to fester? Like, are these guys going to kind of be at each other all season? Do you think they get to a point where they just let it go? Like, how does that go out on the road for those guys?
I know David pretty well. I mean, David's a friend. I think that they'll let bygones be bygones and move along. I think you almost kind of have to at some point. You know, you let it fester, and then it becomes too much of a focal point, and you lose, especially a guy like David, you lose focus on you're leading the championship. Picture. And the championship, I mean, obviously Buddy's chasing the title too, but David, with David leading it, I think more you lose focus on that, and Buddy becomes more of a focus than the championship, and vice versa. So I think you almost have to let it, okay, it's gone, move along. But you never know. I like it because we need rivalries in this sport. We need guys going at each other. That moves the needle, and that makes you want to tune in this weekend at Knoxville Raceway on Saturday night to see, man, did Buddy and David end up in a heat side by side, or the feature side by side, and what goes on? And as they move down the road, obviously the next couple weeks they're at big tracks where if something happens, it's maybe not that you got to pick your point because you're at Eldora and Jacksonville, I guess, first, but got Eldora next weekend looming too. But Buddy's been, he's on the hammer. I mean, people say he races, oh, he's a midget guy. He races like, he just races hard.
Yeah, but I mean, like, let's not forget that Buddy came up in a sprint car. Like, he was a good guy for a couple of years, but before that, he was a sprint car guy.
He was winning sprint car races before he ever hopped in a midget. And he only ran the midget 30 to 35 times a year. He ran the 410 just as much.
But I feel like, too, we're kind of at this point where I feel like just generally the sport has gotten more and more aggressive, right? And you've got kind of some young blood coming in. You've got maybe kind of a turnover of generations here. I have thought about this before, and I don't know if this is something I've talked to you about, but I feel like almost wonder if there's like a little bit of a Kyle Larson effect, right? Like, Kyle is an aggressive driver, right? And it's guys seeing him have success kind of racing a certain way. And, like, you know, not that we're seeing, you know, Larson make some of those kind of really insane moves, but there's definitely, it seems like things are ratcheting up a little bit. And I'm wondering if you see that too, if you feel that too, when you watch racing.
I feel like the youth movement as a whole has kind of pushed things that direction. Obviously, Kyle leading that youth movement. But you look at the way, I mean, Brad races hard from start to finish, but very smart. And he's one of the smarter race car drivers out there, much like Donnie. They both are very meticulous. But you look at guys up front with the Outlaws, David Gravel, Carson Macedo, Sheldon Hottenshield, Buddy Kofoid, those guys, when the green flag drops, there's no riding around or anything like that. I mean, they are on the gas 110%. Not saying guys in the past weren't, but I feel like it's a different kind of 110% than it ever has been, where I don't think you can afford to kind of settle in and maybe ride around for a lap or two because you get gobbled up.
Well, I think we saw that this past week at Riverside, right? Like, Tim Crawley wins a heat race against High Limit, and he goes to get his interview, and he's huffing and puffing out of breath. And it's like, what is that, an eight lap heat race? got him wore out.
It's crazy. I think the style of racing as a whole has changed. And you look at the previous generation, though, and I feel like, you know, for years they always said, you know, you sell T-shirts on the high side and win races on the bottom. And you look how many races like a Kinzer and Sammy and Wolfgang and Lasoski, those guys lived on the bottom and they just hammered you on the bottom. They were so perfect on the bottom, never made an error. Now I feel like you can get away with just beating the hell out of the top side and win races doing that more so than you've ever been able to. It's certainly more exciting. It's more exciting, but in a different way, because I respect the hell out of watching those guys just run a perfect race. I mean, you watch Dana Lasoski through the years at Knoxville Raceway run the bottom, and it's perfection, absolute perfection.
And I think like one of the things, and I've talked about this on my show before, is but like Sheldon is, you know, the most exciting guy in sprint car racing, right? And it's like, because you just don't know lap to lap what's going to happen. And he's a guy that could literally win any night of the week. But, you know, because of the possibility of disaster, like you, I feel like sometimes you just can't take your eyes off that kid.
I've told a couple people that, yeah, obviously, you know, there are races where he spins out or something happens, blows the right rear, sliding across the racetrack, and he loses races probably that you think, man, he should have won that. But then there's four races that he wins that he has no business winning, that he wins because he's willing to push the envelope just a little bit further than anyone else and live on the edge. And it is, no matter where he's running, you're if you're at the racetrack, you're probably at least keeping an eye on him because it's just, it's captivating. It's,
yeah. I want to ask about some of the young guys right now. And obviously you're around one some with Zeb and, you know, we've watched Corey Day kind of blossom overnight. You know, to go from, you know, winning the NARC championship, right? Like the NARC championship, that's a tough deal. Like and to be as young as he is and to go up against the Selzies and the Katings and, you know, all of the veteran guys that run that NARC deal. And it, like, I figured that he was going to be good and he would win races, but you know, to see him do what he's doing right now, like I feel like we're almost like at a little bit of a point where we're kind of at a golden era right now of young guys that are coming in and I mean, they're ready to go right now.
They are. You look at Corey Day hasn't even graduated high school yet. He's still in high school. He's got to graduate next month. I think that speaks a lot to the level of competition in California. And you look at, I feel like, man, if they're on a quarter mile, and this isn't downgrading what he does on bigger tracks, but if they're on a quarter mile, I feel like at this point right now with High Limit, he's the guy to beat on a boring. He is the guy, the marked man, and he's shown that he should be. But he's got an experienced crew. Obviously, you know, Noisy has been around a long time and has won a lot of races as he's worked his way up the crew chief ladder. And then, you know, you've got his dad, he's got Ronnie to lean on, a great family. I spent a lot of time last year here at Dirt Cup when I was out announcing Dirt Cup, just sitting Tuesday night before or Wednesday night before Dirt Cup had started. We started Thursday. I sat in the grandstands right in front of him with Ronnie Day for probably an hour and a half, just talking about life and their plan with Corey and how they value the education is high value and want him to live a normal life. And I just think this year the deal was too good to pass up to go travel. And I feel like he's certainly proved that he is absolutely one to keep an eye on. And he's a lot like Sheldon on the fact that, boy, it's hard to take your eyes off him at certain points. If there's a high side with a curb, he's going to find it and he's going to beat the ever-living crap out of it and make it work.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. And I was thinking about that the other day. I would love to do like a like some sort of survey of, you know, the drivers, the crew guys, whatever, about, you know, who are underrated drivers, who are underrated crew chiefs. And I feel like Shane Bowers like might be on that list of people that we don't talk about. And he's a guy that's been around forever. Kind of reminds me of Tyler Swank a little bit, just a guy that's been around, you know, the sport for years and years and years and has worked for incredible people. And, but to see what he's doing, you know, with a driver like Corey, and it's like that's such an advantage, right? To have, you know, not only a guy like Jason Myers in your corner, who's a two-time World of Outlaws champion, but then to be able to have a crew chief like that you can lean on night to night, that's just got incredible experience. Are there guys like that come to mind that you think are maybe underrated that don't get talked about enough, especially when it comes to the crew chief position?
I feel like you look at like a guy like Jake Argo with Tyler Courtney. I mean, Jake spent some time in the wing game, but then was a shot guy and spent some time in the non-wing world a little bit. And then he pairs up with Sunshine and they go all-star racing. And shoot, year one, they win the all-star championship and the King's Royal year one together. I mean, I feel like Jake maybe, even with his accomplishment, still flies under the radar a little bit. I feel like our crew chief at Rudine with Tyler Tessemaker, I mean, they had last year beat the Outlaws on a half mile, one all-star race on the half mile. And Zeb will tell you half miles were his biggest weak point, big, big weak point. And then he goes and wins his first outlaw race on a half mile with the new motor. And they've adjusted to things with the Ford motor. I think Tyler flies under the radar a little bit as well as being pretty solid. And there are some good young crew chiefs out there that give me a little bit of faith in the future of the sport. Cause I feel like one of the things that makes me nervous looking long-term you know, if you look 20 years down the road, are we going to have enough crew guys to keep this to be sustainable? Because I look at like this offseason, there was a lot of crew guy turnover, and you have big teams like Jason Johnson Racing. They had to hire a couple guys that had very minimal experience working on a sprint car because that's what they could get. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's kind of the thing. I feel like if you're a young kid wanting to work on race cars, there's a pretty good opportunity. Go get your feet wet at a local level. Maybe while you're in high school or college at that age, get your feet wet, and there's going to be opportunities to go traveling with the Outlaws and High Limit, and you can do pretty well.
I have a couple questions I want to get to here in the chat. Owen wants to know, will Space Jam be played over the speakers at Skagit?
That's a Caleb question. I would imagine Caleb will play it at some point. If I do, Owen, I'll make it happen. If I get up here one night and announce, I'll make it happen. That's for sure.
One more. Interested to hear Blake's take on Cole Macedo's performance so far.
Cole's been impressive. You look at what he's been able to do in the Charlton car on the West Coast with NARC. I think is three races he's won, two or three off the top of my head there. Two. And then he gets in Kevin Newton's car and has been in the mix. I mean, he was in the mix at Riverside. Very impressive. And Kevin Newton's team, that's, you know, a younger, newer team that's really kind of trying to find their footing in the sport. So Cole has been very impressive, and he impressed the heck out of me in Ohio. I mean, he dominated the Northwest Ohio scene, and that's just so much different than California. But, man, the Linders, Mikey Linder, the Linders, they're great people, but they kind of had that
pipeline.
Exactly. You look at Buddy, Carson, Cole. Bring these kids in here from California, put them on a slick track, and they'll win.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. Speaking of Caleb, I don't know if you saw the slider piece that I had yesterday from Pat Sullivan about announcing. Yep. I'm curious if you read it, if you have thoughts on that, and you know, obviously as somebody who spent as much time on the mic as you did.
I have it saved on my laptop. I read a portion of it, and then I got tied up on actually a ticketing thing here. I had to run the ticketing office, and haven't gotten back to it yet, but Pat is... I think through the years, I announced for USAC in 2011 and hit it off with Pat right away. And Pat has become a guy I've leaned on a lot. And then when I lived in Indy for 9 years, I did a lot with Pat. Shoot, last year I went to I told him last year, I said, I don't know if I'm going to be moving. I think I might, but I got to get to a Notre Dame game. So I went to a Notre Dame game with he and his wife. They became really close. And Pat is just, he's got a way with words that most don't. 99% of us don't. I certainly don't. But I think he proved some good points in there on, especially on everything that goes on with announcing. Like, it's more than just sitting here and holding a mic. Like, especially me on, I mean, I look at the things I did on race night was so much beyond just announcing. I mean, I was running our My Race Pass as we were doing the races, and you're in a loud environment with a lot of people talking, and there's a lot going on. And someone said, I've had people say, well, it's got to be, you get paid to watch the races. I've told many people I never watched the races. There are a lot of nights I'd announce a race and then have to go back and think, like, what the heck happened? Because you just get so locked in. I mean, I explained it to a friend at one point. It's like an athlete when they get locked in, maybe shooting free throws, where you are just dialed in. That's how I would get with announcing. Like, the outside world, everything kind of became quiet. And you kind of found, I don't focus very well, but that was the one point where I could get dialed in and focus.
What do you think? I mean, I feel like Caleb is a guy who is maybe even a little underrated. Like, he's obviously somebody we hear at the Chili Bowl every year, yep. You know, when you tune into Flow Racing, but then the rest of the year, like, unless you're at Skagit or maybe tuned into the Dirt Cup, you're not going to hear him. I feel like he's a guy that, you know, could take a next step, you know, like we saw Brian Hulbert do this year. I feel like there's a couple guys around the country, and I feel like Caleb could definitely be one of those guys that takes a step.
I feel like at Skagit, we're lucky because I do feel like we have one of the better weekly announcers in the country and one of the more talented announcers in the country that I can bounce ideas off. And obviously, I kind of change how things are going here. And I've got some list of things that Caleb's been very open to my ideas here on some how we go about things. And he's been super easy to work with. Obviously, I have a good relationship with Caleb from coming out here and working Dirt Cup the past couple of years. But we're lucky to have him. He is great. He does a great job keeping the fans entertained, which is a big part of the job. And hopefully we can limit some of the points where he has to truly entertain the crowd and keep them entertained. So we've got tractors on the track and things like that. We're going to, you know, try to run. That's one of our goals this year, is to run in a more efficient program. That in turn makes his life a little bit easier, but we are lucky to have Caleb. I think he is extremely talented. He knows what he's talking about. He knows the people. He's been here a long time, which sometimes it's hard to put a value on having an announcer that's been here for 20 years because they know the players.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like, you know, the stuff with Pat, right? Like, I have never met Pat in person. You know,
oh, he's awesome.
he reached out to me via email because I was like, hey, I'm looking for submissions for the slider. And he was like, hey, you know, if you ever need anything, I'm like, yeah, you know, just write what you want and we'll just put it out there. And it's funny, he sends me stuff and he's like, let me know what you think about this. If you don't want to use it, it's okay. And it's like, no, like, give me more. And like, I'm not editing anything. Like, I don't have to change anything. Like, he's such a smart guy. And I feel like I wish we had more of that around the sport. Those guys that are really thinking about things and really looking at things from kind of a different perspective. And I like that he writes these things and he kind of challenges notions and he brings in that kind of historic perspective because he's been around the sport for so long. Like he's such an interesting guy, and I'm glad that I've kind of, you know, at least through this thing, kind of gotten to know him a little bit, but you know, just, I feel like he is an interesting and unique guy in the sport. And I wish we had more guys like him.
I know this gets thrown around a lot of people. So he's one of my favorites. Pat truly is one of my favorite people. Like, he's a guy I can pick up the phone with, much like you, and just have a half hour conversation. And we haven't maybe talked in 2 weeks and we just pick up, or haven't seen each other in, you know, a long time, and just pick up right where he left off. And
can I stop you 1 second here? Yep. I don't know that me and you have ever had a half hour conversation.
I know that's
it's
true.
Probably an hour.
That's true. There's sometimes I look at my phone like, shoot, JP and I have been on the phone for 2.5 hours. We're solving the world's problems, but
we are.
Pat's much like that, where I can just pick up the phone and I can, like you, I can get guidance, I can get opinions, and if you think I'm making the right move, because Pat was a lot like you, much like you. When I told you about what I potentially had going on post All-Stars and what my options were and laid it out, I got an honest opinion on what I was doing, and it just reiterated, making the right decisions. And Pat was kind of the same. I talked to him a lot about what my possibilities were and where the right move was. And I feel like I made the right move. I'm very happy with where I am, and working for Kevin has been awesome. I've been lucky. You know, I've worked a lot. I got to work for Tony for 9 years, and he was incredible to work for. And Kevin has been much of the same. I feel like Tony and Kevin are kind of the same on how they view things too, you know, which made the transition over here very easy.
Well, and those guys are friends anyway too, aren't they? Yeah.
I was supposed to go to Vegas 2 weeks ago. The foundation was on Tony's Dragster in Vegas, but I woke up the day that I was going to fly to Vegas with a fever of 102 and had to cancel, which killed me. I was, instead of being in Las Vegas having the time of my life, I was on the couch feeling miserable. So that killed me. But no, they're buddies, and that's great, which has been cool.
Me and you ran into each other at Golden Isles, and I feel like with your situation, I was surprised you were even going to be there, but with your situation at Skagit, like, are you going to have opportunities to travel this year? Are you going to try to go hang out with the Rudine guys periodically? Are there races you're going to try to get to this year? I mean, I'm assuming that the Nationals is still on your schedule.
100% is. Kevin told me there'll be points where he's going to send me out with the team. It's just finding the right points. Obviously, we're all learning here, because this role that he crafted for me, I didn't dive into somebody's role and replace someone. Kevin's literally carving this role out for me. I'm so appreciative of that, him rolling the dice and letting me do something that I've always been super interested in, and working with John Hager on the business side of things and really learning how a racetrack operates. But there will be times I'll go out on the road, and I'll be at the Race for Dean Foundation race at I-70 in June, I think June 6th and 7th. So I'll get to see Brooke and Casey Schumann there. I'll go home to the Knoxville Nationals. I don't think I could miss that race. That wouldn't be possible for me to miss.
Trump bar.
Yeah, we got a business to run with the Trump bar that we specialize in operating in the red. But I got Busch Light to drink. No, I'll go back home. I think I'll fly home Sunday, Capitani, for that, and be home for the week. I don't know if I'm going to go to the Royal and the high limit race out there, the 100 grand to win race that talked about maybe going to that. So that's a potential. And I'll have the Chili Bowl and Gateway Dirt Nationals, and nothing else concrete on my schedule right now. Maybe I'll go to Larry for Trophy Cup this year. Kevin's very involved with Trophy Cup, and that race is probably of the races I haven't been to, P1 on my bucket list. So maybe this is year I knock that out. I'm not sure yet, but
I'll let you go here pretty quickly. If anybody is in the chat and wants to get questions in for Blake, certainly get those in now. I'm curious, now that you're at Skagit, what about working there or being around the racetrack every day? Like, what has surprised you about, you know, what you've done here so far? And, you know, is it dealing with the local municipality as you're trying to get stuff done? Is it some sort of promotion thing? Like, and obviously your season hasn't started yet, so there's still a lot more for you to learn, but just, you know, through these first couple of months.
It's been surprising I didn't realize how much of what we do, we have to deal with, like, as you mentioned, the local municipalities, dealing with the county and planning with the county on projects, even at the racetrack. You kind of maybe get stuck in this, like, well, Kevin owns the property, we can do what we want. No, that's not entirely true. Mm-hmm. We work a lot with the county. I mean, shoot, that property we bought across the road, they just put in a little bit of a bridge through the ditch for fans to walk across the road to get onto the racetrack property. And that was a major project where they had cut 8 to 10 trees down that we had lining the road for sound. And that's been, I think, the biggest surprise for me. Before I was traveling, I worked at Knoxville Raceway, Boonsville, a lot of tracks back home, but I didn't realize how much of what we do is tied in with the county on getting approvals to do things. That's been the biggest surprise.
Yeah. Sean in the dirt, where did his comment go? I just
lost Sean.
He wanted to know about how you feel about the traffic. Ask Blake if he loves the traffic in Seattle. Well,
the nice thing is, as Sean knows, Sean lives in Linwood with me. I go north, everyone's coming south. Everyone's going south when I'm going north. So the traffic is bad, though. It is. There have been days where I've had to live in it. It makes you want to beat your head on a wheel. I do know, Sean, you need to reach out to John Hager about maybe getting Hager on the podcast.
Okay.
Sean lives out here. He's actually the voice at Elma.
Oh, okay.
Down in Grace Harbor.
Nice.
But we get him up here a couple times through the year.
Is Hagar a guy that's is he down to be interviewed?
No, absolutely. No. That's why I say that Sean needs to get him on the podcast. John hates interviews, getting his picture taken. Like, there's no way we could get him to, but Sean knows that. We tried to get him on the show at Warpa. Wouldn't do it.
I love it. These ones are just like a couple comments. Jay says, miss you coming through Ohio. And then Eric says, please co-announce a Dirt Cup. Love having you here.
Yeah, I don't know, Eric. That's potential. I think it really depends on how busy I am. Obviously, I'm learning a new role, so I'll be tied up on race nights. So there's a chance that I at least peek my head up in the booth with Caleb for a bit. I don't know. It just depends on how tied up I am. I'll miss getting through Ohio, though. Like Attica, Fremont, those Atomic, obviously Eldora, Wayne County. Like, we had some great races through there. And obviously, the last 9 years, I spent the better part of a lot of seasons through Ohio. And we weren't racing in Ohio, I was driving through Ohio to get to where we were going. I felt like I almost became an Ohio resident, even though I lived in Indiana. But I'm glad that Fremont's on Dirt Vision now, because I can watch Fremont and Attica now, and Wayne County's on the cushion, so I can catch that a little bit. I see Atomic time to time on Flow, so I can at least keep up. I'm doing my best to keep up with what's going on back in Ohio. Shoot, you've seen it, JFees. The car counts in Ohio have been phenomenal. We're like 38 cars to start the season at Attica Fremont. You look three years ago, there were points at Attica, they were barely getting 24. So very encouraging what's going on there.
I know that I had you on to talk about sprint car stuff, but I'm curious if you've been paying attention to any late model things and specifically the news here from the last 24 hours that Hudson O'Neill is now has his own team.
The Longhorn.
Yeah. What do we think about that?
Boy, talk about going here to here. Hudson will be just fine. I'm excited to see how he does. The late model world has been, I feel like, you know, the sprint car world has been chaotic. The late model world has been every bit as chaotic. You know, the Coltman Farms ride, they've switched drivers. T-Mac switching teams, and we just have a lot of ride swapping there. And unfortunately, I don't think I'm going to be able to do the Castro Flow Racing Night in America stuff, which I really enjoyed the last couple of years, because it kind of kept me immersed in the late model world with Ben and DJ and what's happening. I won't miss one of their races, though. But boy, it's been every bit as chaotic as the sprint cars, maybe even more chaotic because we're into the season and they're ride swapping more than what we are.
Yeah, it's one thing that I have really kind of enjoyed about doing the daily show is I feel like because of Open Red, I got kind of pigeonholed as like a sprint car guy. And so everybody thinks that I'm like against late models or something, but the late model world has really kind of embraced like what it is that I do. And the people that I get to talk to now and that I hear from, and, you know, getting text messages from Bobby Pierce and hearing from Kevin Rumley on things, like it's really interesting and really cool that they kind of enjoy what it is that I do. And I know that you kind of are in the same boat where you, you're kind of labeled as an open wheel or a sprint car guy, but then, you know, you did the Flow Series last year. You're going to do the Gateway Dirt Nationals and do that. And actually I have a question here from Chris. He wants to know if you got enough parts from Gateway to make a race car yet.
Gosh, I'm close, Chris. I just need a motor probably. I'm looking for that and I'll be good to go. You get everything else there.
Yeah. I'm going to try to actually see if I can maybe make it to a Flow Series race this year. Now that we've got the old Kubota tie in, I might try to make it out to a show or two because there's some fun things I think that could be going on there.
The late model world's great. I mean, you're right. They kind of maybe pigeonholed me as a sprint car guy. I grew up watching modifieds and late models every Friday and Saturday night and going to Knoxville once or twice
Boone a year. Speedway, baby.
Boone Speedway, Marshtown Speedway. Those were home for me, but yeah. I love late models. And they welcomed me with open arms back into the late model world the last couple seasons. And I think a large part of that is due to Michael Rigsby and Ben Shelton and Dustin Jarrett, who really kind of helped me get back into it. But they were great. I mean, all those drivers were great with my dumb questions and Ben and DJ walking the pits with them. And, you know, just working 12 late model races a year was a blast. I'll miss getting to spend some time on the road with those guys. We had a fun group with Castrol Flow Racing Night in America. Everyone was really fun. And we got to give everyone a hard time every day on race day. And then we'd leave. And 2 weeks later, we'd see each other again. But I'll still follow along very close. I still watch Lucas stuff and the Outlaw stuff on Dirt Vision. I mean, now that I'm not traveling near as much, I can get home and watch Dirt Vision and Flow every Friday night. The only thing that kills me is this time zone. I still say this time zone is the worst time. I tell Hager every day, this time zone sucks.
I felt it was the opposite when I lived up, because obviously I'm from Oregon, so I grew up out there, but I loved when I was a kid and cup races would be on at 1 Eastern. They'd be at 10 a.m. Pacific. You could watch the cup race and have the whole rest of the day do whatever the hell you wanted.
I just hate when like the Outlaws are in High Limit or, you know, the late models in Lucas, they'll be on the East Coast and it's like 4 o'clock and we're time trialing. I'm like, I'm still at the track. Now we're doing time trials. I got an hour drive home. I miss heat races. But it is different. Football season was odd here. And I can tell you, college football season is going to hit me quick. When Iowa has a 9 a.m. kickoff, it's going to be way too early, 9 a.m. for me to have my blood pressure sky high and cussing at 9 a.m.
What are you going to do when you can't go to a bunch of games this year?
Oh, that's going to be my biggest adjustment.
That's like the worst part of this.
And Kevin and I talked about that because he said, you know, you're not going to be able to get home as much. And I'll fly, I'll get to 3 games this year, which is the least amount of, outside of the year I lived in Charlotte, the least amount of games I've been to since 92, 93. We had season tickets growing up. So my parents started taking me. I was 5, I think, when I started getting to go to games with them. So that was 94, where my first memories of going to Iowa football games. So it's 30 years of, I'll go home to 2. I think I'll get home for Washington, ironically, on the 12th of October, Black Friday for Nebraska. And I'm going to try to go to LA to see Iowa play at UCLA in the Rose Bowl.
And obviously, you know, your girl, Caitlin Clark, has been at the center of attention here. Did you get a chance to see her at all?
I saw Kate. I didn't get to see her this year, but I saw her play, I don't know, probably 15 times. While she was at Iowa. So that was, I mean, before I was watching Caitlin Clark before it was cool.
Yeah. You knew who she was before the rest. Everybody else figured it out.
You know how I operate though. I was going to Iowa women's basketball games when they would come out and be 200 people at the game. But no, she's been fun. And they were advertising Caitlin Clark in the NFL draft last night, which I thought was wild.
Never
thought I would see that day come.
Steven wants to know, and obviously this was a big topic of conversation, you know, but about High Limit not racing much in Ohio. How do you feel about that?
That's, and I hate that for the Ohio fans because they've been so used to through the years. I mean, shoot, for 40 years, the All-Stars were home in Ohio and now they're not. And that's a large void in Ohio sprint car racing to fill that we thought we had filled, and things fell through with the, literally at the goal line. I mean, we were hours away from announcing that I wasn't involved with it, but it was hours away from a major announcement of a series kind of coming together to fill that void that fell through with right there, which kind of stinks. But I do hate that High Limit's not there. I wish they could have got there, but it just didn't work out. You know, it is what it is. And I know how scheduling goes. And sometimes it's got to work for both parties to do it. And I think that's one thing fans have to understand when they say, well, I can't believe they're not going here or there. Well, it has to work for High Limit and it has to work for the racetracks. So sometimes if it doesn't work for one party, that's all it takes to go off, or one thing be off of the 10 things that need to work. I wouldn't rule them out going back there in the future. I wish they were going to Attica and Fremont this year, because I feel like those two tracks deserve a lot of national series because they race 410s weekly and pay very good. And, you know, Wayne County runs them weekly and they got a good show there. Atomic runs them weekly. So I really feel like these tracks that run 410s weekly deserve to have national touring series coming once or twice, but they may not want that, or vice versa.
Yeah, I think that's something that gets forgotten a lot too, is and it, every year you get it when you put the schedule out, right? Half the fans are loving it, half the fans hate it. And next year, like when they decide to go to the track you want them to go to, they're going to miss off somebody else, then
we're not going there.
Yeah, it's the nature of the beast. I think you end up with a rotation a lot of places too. Like, you know, a track might be on one year and then you go away for 2 or 3 years and then they come back. These things are kind of ever evolving.
I always told my trunk bar buddies, they always knew. Schedule release day was my least favorite day of the year. 100% least favorite day of the year. Dreaded I knew we had to get there, but it was like when we got it on our schedule, like, hey, this is when we're going to release the all-star schedule. It's going to come out November 23rd. I just dreaded it because I knew I was going to be in a bad mood the whole day, because it's like we can have 10 fans, and I have to remind myself this often. You can have 10 fans that are like, this is the greatest schedule in the world. But then that one fan that comments, you guys are the biggest idiots ever. Why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? Just put you in a bad, like, God dang it. Like, we can't go everywhere.
Yeah, no, it's not possible. There's not enough dates, and you end up scheduling up against people. And
it's got to work for everybody. And then you're putting a schedule together. Everyone wants Saturdays. Well, there's only
obviously
20 Saturdays to go around. So we got 60 races. So yeah, there's 40 races that aren't on a Saturday.
For sure. Well, Blake, we are approaching an hour here, and I'm sure you have other things that you would like to do with your Friday. But thanks for hopping on here. What do people need to know about Skagit, and where can they get things and see the schedule and all of that type of stuff?
Here's the first part of our schedule. Oh, I'm moving the wrong way. Go to skagitspeedway.com, though. Check out our schedule. We got our tickets on sale. Buy some tickets. And if you're here in Washington watching, stop me at the racetrack. I'd love to meet, as you know, Justin, I love to meet people. So whether I'm out on the road, don't be afraid. Stop me, grab me, just say hi. We're going to have a good season at Skagit. We've got some big things planned that we haven't even announced yet. Or, you know, we're working on planning throughout the season and working on some awards and things like that. So we're really trying. I think when we brought 410s back here, everyone said, you guys are crazy. 410s are never going to work here. They're dead in the Northwest. I think we averaged 8 410s in 2022. 16, I think we were like 15, 16 last year. And we're going to be close to 20 this year. So we're trending in the right direction.
Cool. Well, Blake, thank you, sir. I appreciate you taking some time, and we'll catch up again soon.
Love it, Feeler. Love it, JP.
See you, buddy.
See ya.